You're not sitting in the driveway for 3 hours
check. Yeah, left blinker, checking systems. Left blinker, check. Right blinker, check.
And load in the fuel. 10 minutes before departure, you know. And then you get to work and you sit in the parking lot for another 3 hours before you get out of it. It's like, no, man.
Well, now we have to wait 14 days when I get to work.
Well, quarantine there is for 14 that, days yeah.
after you get to work.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Good evening, Ted. It is episode 120. Today is Sunday, and so are we.
I kind of wanted to hold the trailers till the one trailer Tenet for next week, because next week is a palindrome 121.
Okay, so we're doing Tenet. Let's get the pronunciation correct this Tenet. Time.
Tenet, I said it.
That's right.
Okay, good.
And anybody wants to hear how Ted mispronounces, whatever.
See, if you did it too.
I know. It's episode 100. We talked about the teaser.
Okay.
Go listen to the episode, but I would highly recommend at least our open for that week because we're working on getting him a good pronunciation.
That's right. All right, but we did that even before we drank beers. So is that where you're heading?
Yeah, I was gonna say we need to get some beers.
Okay.
You beat me to the punch, so why don't you go ahead?
All right, I'm excited. I had two beers to choose from tonight, but because I've had so many fruity endeavors in the past couple of weeks, I went with something that I hope was going to be a little more on the woodsy, piney side. It's called Maiden West IPA, and it's by a company called Little Beast Brewing in Oregon.
Made in West?
No, like Maiden, like a woman.
Oh, Maiden, like Iron Maiden.
Yeah. See, that is okay. Some cool floral.
I like it.
Has a lot of ferns on it.
Another one of those silver cans they slap a sticker on.
Just put a sticker on it, be done. You know, you don't need a lot of pomp and circumstance. Put it inside the can.
That's it. Put all your efforts into what goes in the can rather than what's on the can.
Right. Well, I mean, do a little design efforts, but don't waste your time etching in glass or something.
So I have Boulevard Brewing Company out of Kansas City, Missouri.
Mm.
Tank 7.
Oh yeah, I love that.
Ale. You've had this.
I love that. That's a good farmhouse ale.
Okay, didn't know you had it. Okay, well, there you go. I guess I don't have to talk anymore.
I always love, what is that? Is that a tulip? What is that? What kind of glass is that?
Good question. It's an Affligem triple glass. I don't know what it is, but I felt I needed to do something slightly different that's still Belgian-y in style.
Right.
And I'm going to let that head go down and I'll give you a tasting note. So how does yours taste?
So mine is awesome. It has a blend of hops that I love. So it has Citra, Simcoe, and Sentinel hops. It says it has Citro first, but to me the Simcoe is the palate forward one because that's obviously the piniest of them. It says delivering big notes of citrus, tropical fruit, and pine. I would reverse it and say pine first and then citric, but I think that's because I've been doing like big Citra and stuff like that. And just so you know, I had a social distancing beer with Frank earlier in the week, and I got those two beers from that service that we were kind of ragging on a few months ago.
Yeah, what's the company? It's I don't remember.
Trout Travor or something like that. I don't
Travor,
even know.
Travor. Or
something. Yeah. I deleted it off my phone. I deleted my app and stuff. And
it, so you're done with it.
I had forgotten about it. And then, you know, we get a delivery and it's these two cans. And it was this crazy stout. Peanut butter, chocolate, maple, stout.
Was it good? It sounds very like the dessert.
It was a dessert. And I was like, oh, this is good, you know. And I had two cans, so I was going to drink one with Frank and then one on the during the pod this week. And I was just like, I don't really, you know, I split it with Frank and that was good. It was 7.5%. That was good, you know? So it was fine for the midweek, you know, end of the day, 5 o'clock beer. But I don't know. I felt more like an IPA this evening. So.
And what ABV is it tonight?
ABV tonight is, let's see. It's 6.1 tonight.
6.1. Yeah, I love how like a midweek beer is a 7.5.
Well, I drank half of it. So it was half for me, half for Frank. Of it.
Okay, I'll give you that. Yeah, mine tonight is an 8.5%.
Oh, no, yeah, that's what I do like. I mean, and you could find that in a few places. There's a few places that have that on tap, like downtown, like around the Staples Center and stuff like that. It's a nice farm. What are your tasting notes?
I would say mildly smooth. It's yeah, I mean, it's not super heavy on the Belgian flavor that you come to know. And I think, overall, I mean, it has some of that like banana-y floral notes that you get from a Belgian.
Mm, okay. It's the farmhouse. It's like a close to Saison, like, right? It's on its way to Saison.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And it's like, but it's more on the mild side.
I would say. It's not hitting you over the head with the banana.
Exactly.
It's funny. I was down. I forget what it was. It was like years ago. I was downtown for a conference and we were near the Staples Center and we're in a restaurant, I think called The Farm or something like that. And everybody was having Chimay. And I was like, all right, I could do blue Chimay, you know?
What is the blue one? Is the Grand Reserve or something?
Yeah, whatever. So I did a blue Chimay to start, but then I had one of these farmhouse, the tank number, whatever it is. And I was like, oh, this 7. Is really, it's not, I mean, it was a nice, like, I didn't want to drink Chimay all night long, you know, on the boss's dime, you know?
I'll say you go Chimay all night. Next thing you know, the company's going bankrupt. This doesn't speak to our audience because our audience is so learned when it comes to the streaming space. But Netflix is canceling all the inactive accounts.
I love it.
Have you heard that?
I love it. You know, I heard that earlier this week and I was like, I have to talk about this on the podcast because I always talk about these boss moves.
Did I steal your notes?
No, because I forgot it already. But I was like, it's another boss move from Netflix. You know, these zombie accounts. I listen to a great podcast, and part of the reason I listen to this podcast is it's a daily podcast, and it's like 15 minutes long. But it's called Snacks Daily, and it's from the Robinhood guys. Have you heard Robinhood Financial?
No, I have not.
So Robinhood Financial is trying to get millennials and Gen Zers to invest money. So they have these super ultra small accounts. You can set it up with your bank account and do all that stuff. So,
oh, I have heard of that. Yes.
So Robinhood, they love these guys that were talking finances and they were called Snacks Daily and they would give like just your top, top finance kind of stories of the day. So they give you three top stories of finance of the day. And this week it was like, they were talking about zombie accounts and they were talking about how like gyms and all these other places and streaming services love the fact that people subscribe and then don't use the service.
Oh, they're cash cows.
It's like, what better customer can you have is someone who is, there's no one who's less of a worry to you than somebody who never comes in and pays you every month, right? And I said this probably 6 months ago to you that when we did the trial account, like Netflix is so confident in their product that they're like, you know, we'll give you a 14-day trial. And as you come up on 10 days, they're like, there's only 4 days left on your trial. You know, we're going to cancel you if you don't want it. Whereas everyone else wants to trick you into paying for that first month.
Well, it's a negative subscription option to where like you sign up, but it's up to you to cancel where they don't do that. So they're like, well, if you don't want it, then screw it. We'll cancel it anyway.
Yeah. And I heard that they have low hundreds of thousands of accounts that are zombie accounts.
I'm surprised there's that many, though. I mean, like, how do you forget that you're paying on Netflix?
And then how do you not use it for a year?
Totally.
That's the thing. Like, if you've logged in once within a year, that's when they're not going to cancel you. Like, what if I logged in like 11 months ago? You know, like,
right.
It's such a crazy line to draw. But again, just a nice PR marketing. marketing to put out there to be like, hey, we're going to give you a break. You know, we'll stop charging you after a year if you don't use our stuff, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing. I mean, I wish
it's probably more marketing than anything, don't you think?
Well, more marketing in the sense that people are going to think they're altruistic. And so now I'm going to be more likely to go and be on Netflix, because if I happen to accidentally forget, then they're just going to cancel me and I won't have to worry about paying in perpetuity.
And it's also thumbing your nose at your competition. You know, your competition's out there like trying to scrounge and like scrape all the accounts together they can and stuff. And
yeah,
you're sitting at 150 million accounts worldwide or something like that, and you're willing to lose 100,000. So
do you think Disney Plus, Hulu, Amazon, and all the other ones, HBO and stuff, are like scrounging to like fool you and trick you into like spending money?
I mean, not as much as, you know, Jim and the, you know, Equinox or Orange Theory or whatever it is, you know, not as much as the gyms. But, you know, I think, well, yeah, I was trying to cancel that center, the Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, the Chris Hemsworth. Yeah.
So I did the 6 weeks Chris Hemsworth for the coronavirus first 6 weeks. And I went in to cancel it and I had forgotten what account that I was using. So I went in to cancel it and I was like, opened a ticket with them. And I was like, I'd like to cancel this account. And by the way, I really liked his last movie on Netflix, you know, and they were like, well, pass it along. And we don't find any accounts under your name. So I thought I was golden, right? And then we got charged the next week. And I was like, oh, I thought I canceled this. And they're like, oh, it's on this other account, on this other email you have. And I was like, ugh. So I had to go back and forth with them. And I had I had selected the 1 year subscription. So they charged me for a year. And I was like, oh, I don't want to pay $100. You know, give me $100 back. I came to you before the term was up and I asked for it. And then you still charged me. And they're like, well, you didn't come to us with the right account. And I was like, ugh. I'm only one person, you know, figure this out. Like, you know, they sorted it out, took an extra week, but they did sort it out. So thank you to Center for doing that. But yeah, so zombie accounts. Yes, it is a boss move, but I think it's more PR than anything.
All right. Yeah. I mean, maybe I don't. Yeah, I could see that to some degree. I guess the point is, if you're into Netflix, you're into Netflix. And if you're not, I mean, who's not? I don't know what the PR side of it would have to do other than, like you said, thumbing their nose at the competition.
And even if there's, you know, some lower level, you know, middle management person who's in charge of that department,
making
or whatever,
a name for himself or herself.
And it's like trying to, like, yeah. So who knows? It's an interesting angle.
Right.
But it follows their startup subscription, that free little trial thing. It follows the ideology that they have behind their product. We believe in this product so much that we don't want you if you don't want us, you know?
That's how a relationship should be. I mean,
right.
I shouldn't have to trick my wife into being married to me and then fool her into staying married by like incentivizing like weird things or like hiding like the divorce papers or something, you know? Like
if Anne wants a divorce, she's going to have to call the call center and she'll have to get to the third tier. You have to get the third tier support to get a divorce.
And who knows what email she got married under, right?
Right, right.
All right, so that was part of it, the center thing. Tell me more about your week. What else?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So this week, I continue to buy and sell things on all services. So Facebook. And I'm getting more and more intrigued with Mercari. Have you heard of Mercari?
Mercari? No. What is Mercari?
Mecari with an accent on it.
Mercari.
So it's kind of like a person-to-person Amazon.
Okay.
So they have anything you want on there, kind of. You know, and then they invite people to sell on there, and then they incentivize you by they take a cut from what you get, but then they keep their money, they keep your money in account on the site. And I think there's definitely a way to get it out, but there's a bit of another premium to get it out, even if it's like 2% or something like that, over $100 or something. So you put your products in there, you ship them all over the country, all over the country, and then you build up an account. And from that account, you buy things that you want. You know what I mean? So it's basically like I have two garages full of what I consider junk, you know? And if I could convert that into cash or convert that into a credit.
But it's like credit on their store.
A credit in their account, then I can be like, here, I'll buy something. I bought like a phone holder for my bike since we're biking a lot more. I bought that.
Now you say it's P2P, person to person.
Yeah.
And it's like a Amazon P2P. So what I would do, let's just Canon 5D Mark IV.
Right.
You know, I want to buy that camera. So I type that in the search bar, and then it shows me a list of everybody who's selling that camera.
Right.
And then I choose the one, but they're all used though, right?
They're all, no, some of them are new. And I don't even know how. There's some people that have like Amazon stores.
Or eBay stores or something.
Yeah, and they'll sell on Mercari as well. So there's some new stuff on there as well. And that's where I've been kind of shopping. You know, I've been, I have a credit there. So rather than paying the VIG to get the money out, I've already paid them, you know, to convert my junk into a credit, you know, I don't want to pay them again to convert it to something else, you know? So it's interesting. It's an interesting theory. They have a lot of stuff in there. So I don't know how they do it. They're always on the trend line. So you can always see what's selling really well, and they kind of try to instruct or inform their sellers on what's hot right now, what's trending right now. If you have anything like this, then go ahead and put these keywords in there and you'll probably get more views and you might get a better sale.
Okay, so I'm on the site right now. Uh-huh. And pretty much it looks like, I'm just typing in some keywords and stuff.
Yeah.
It looks like people are selling like used cameras, used sporting equipment and things, and then I see some people selling the new stuff, but essentially it's almost like an eBay, whereas it's like a what is it called, an eBay, like buy now or whatever, instead of the
right buy now, right? Yes, exactly.
So it's kind of like an eBay buy now site where you're selling used stuff, but then when you get paid you don't get cash, it goes into their account, so it's just, it keeps like recirculating money within the system.
It can, or you can get it out. I have yet to try to get it out. When I tried to put a debit card on it, I think I'm in a credit union, it didn't really work. So I was able to put a credit card on the account, which you can't take out to you. You can't, you know, can't remove your money to a credit card. So, you know, I have another bigger bank account, but I was like, oh, that's, you know, it's fine to just leave it in there. And there's enough stuff in there that I want that I'm willing to leave it in there. I'm not selling thousands of dollars in there. So if there's a couple $100 in there and we want to buy something, you know, I think Bryce is, he has his eye set on a new PlayStation because we had PS3 and he's looking at the PS4. So I said, well, let's wait until the PS5 comes out later this year and then maybe we'll get a PS4 and you could do that. And since he has, you know, he's a little kid, so little kids, I don't know, when they're like 10, they save all their money, and then when they're like a teenager, they spend all their money. It's really funny to have like the 10-year-old that has like all the money he's made in the past 2 years, and my 14-year-old who's like, you know, spending it the minute she gets it, you know?
Yeah, that's funny. So I'll have to look more into this and kind of see how it is. But it, I don't know. It looks like
you don't have any stuff to sell. You don't really have anything.
No, I sell stuff all the time.
Oh, you sell it on eBay?
eBay, sometimes Amazon, but usually I do eBay or something just because I think it gets a...
Oh, you sell on Amazon?
Sometimes. I have in the past.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and then you could do a couple things there. You could do fulfillment by Amazon. So you just send... Like, they pay you. You send it in, and then whatever it sells for, they give you... Or I should say, they take, like, a cut.
Uh-huh.
That's one way to do it. Or you could sell on Amazon the same way you would on eBay. Otherwise, yeah, I'll just sell stuff on eBay usually. And usually, I don't know, it depends. Like, I've sold a bunch of camera equipment. I've sold lots of bike stuff, you know, different bike components and parts and things. It, you know, I mean, but this might be a platform I'll have to check into. So
yeah, check it out. Let me know what you think. Because Anne was actually talking about selling on Amazon for some of the stuff. And I was like, this is easy. You know, I don't want to like get into another platform. I had a couple other platforms and I was just just like, I was unimpressed by it. And it's interesting. This model is, it works for me psychologically. The other models were like, let go. Have you heard of let go, right? Letgo.com.
Yeah. Yeah.
Their model is they want people selling stuff to pay to advertise that I have stuff to, I have things to sell. And I just don't want to pay to up.
Yeah. I agree with it.
Rank my stuff up, you know, like I,
yeah, that sounds,
I don't need to pay money to sell my stuff, junk.
I always feel like the things that I'm selling, it's not, you know, like I'm going to sell like a bike stem, right? That's, you know, a salsa bike stem, let's say.
Right.
Somebody who's looking for that stem is going to put in the search bar salsa bike stem, and then mine's going to pop up. I don't need to upvote it because I'm not trying to sell like things that are just like commodity items that everybody's selling, and right. I'm trying to get mine in front of them. Mine is such a one-off that either you're looking for it or you're not.
And the quality that you, that the quality of the stuff you buy is on the premium side anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So like somebody that would want a high-end bike stem would know to put in the key term of what you're talking about.
For sure, exactly.
And it's not like a cut rate, whatever, bike part, you know?
Yeah, that's right. I guess the main thing I would look at with this between Amazon, eBay, Mercari, or Letgo, or whatever it might be, but I would look at to see what the fees are and what they charge to list, if they have a listing fee, what happens when it expires, it doesn't sell, and I'd look at all that kind of stuff.
Who has listing fees?
Well, eBay used to.
Oh, okay.
And I think they got rid of those, and then they relist them for free and all that stuff, but eBay still, I mean, they're still taking a cut of what you sell for, you know, so they're taking a percentage. I would just look at what those are and everything and just, I don't know, see how things are, but I'll check it out.
Yeah.
It might be worth it.
So that, other than that, this week, we bought a punching bag.
Like a heavy bag?
Like a heavy bag for Bryce.
Nice.
And I brought it home and I was like, this is really, really heavy. And I bought it for like,
they are heavy.
I bought it for $20 and then I put it down and I was like, oh, there's a little bit of water coming out the bottom of this thing. And I guess the guy had left it out for a little bit and it was waterlogged. So I had I borrowed a tarp from Frank and I pulled all the wadding out of it. If you ever want to see what's inside of a heavy bag, you don't want to see it. It's just like awful, like cloth, like remnants of everything. And, you know, it's crazy. But well, I pulled it out. I sat it out.
Like recycled clothing or something.
Yeah, something. But it's much, much less discernible than that. You know what I mean?
Right.
You can't tell what it is. But I spread it out over the tarp and over a few days, dried it all out. And it was as good as new. So, you know, everything that was going for $50 to $100, I got it for $20. So, yeah.
And where did you get that from?
Oh, that Facebook.
Oh, Facebook.
Up the street.
Yeah. Nice.
But that's it. Just adventures in buying stuff.
Cool. Yeah, we had a quiet week this week. Not much went on. You know, I come in from the garage. I'm doing some stuff outside. I'm watering the garden and everything. And I walk in and the boys are in the kitchen. They got a stainless steel like mixing bowl.
Uh-oh.
They mushed up bananas. Flour is everywhere. And I'm like, what?
Banana bread.
Yeah, exactly, right? I'm like, what are you guys doing? Oh, me and Mikey are making banana bread and we want to take it to the firemen. I said, how do you even know how to make banana bread? He's like, well, I've seen mommy bake. She puts bananas in his flour. I'm like, I think it's a little bit more than that, boys. You know, I said, so anyway, this weekend we could do some banana bread, whatever it was, right? So we kind of cleaned up the mess that they started. So then Clarissa wound up baking this weekend and everything. So, and then we're thinking like, oh yeah, we'll take it over to the firemen. And then we're at dinner. We're both like, wait a minute. They probably can't take it, you know, because of all the coronavirus stuff.
Oh no.
So I'm going to call tomorrow. I'll just be like, hey, you know, my kids wanted to do some baking for you guys. Are you guys able to take any of this stuff or whatever? And if they can, we'll go over to the firehouse. And if they can't, well, we'll be like, all right, when all this is over, then we'll definitely bring you guys something. So, but yeah, other than a 5 and a 7 year old trying to bake banana bread.
You made some turtles too.
And the turtles, that was more baking. Yeah, that was all Clarissa though. I didn't do anything with that. Yeah, turtles, snails, and dolphins.
Oh, awesome.
So yeah, quiet week otherwise, not a whole lot to talk about.
Are you still working, right? You're still working till the end of this month, I think.
Yeah, school for the boys ends on Thursday, so we're approaching the final week, and technically I'm supposed to work until the end of June, but man, I don't know what I would do, so I'm just gonna like fool them. And if I got to go to a meeting or talk about things, you know, hey, I'm always there and I do those things. But man, yeah. I don't know what the heck else I'm going to do. All right. So let's get the name straight. Tenet.
Tenet.
There you go. I think we got it. We don't, I think, no I think need. We don't have to worry no this. Need. That's it. So,
and how do you, and who do you call the person who does the camera art on a film?
What do you call the person?
Yeah.
I mean,
not the director, but the cinema
producer.
Cinema.
Oh, the cinematographer.
If you're gonna pick on me about Tenet, I was gonna hit you with cinematography.
There we go. So we covered the Tenet teaser trailer in episode 100.
Say that one,
and as I mentioned, go back, listen to the open at a minimum, and then you can even listen to the rest of it too. We would both love that.
But just get, you know, as long as you want to listen to the beginning and we get the download, we're good.
That's it. And I would also say though, this will surely be a watch. Like we said a couple weeks ago, I mean, drinking beer and watching action movies.
But I mean, so I have a double reason as to why I picked this movie for this week. And
okay.
And I couldn't wait anymore for it, because it's a counterpoint to last week's. You know, you see the
Forces of Nature was the Sandra Bullock
movie. Yes, exactly. And you know, you watch this, and of course, I'm watching intently because I definitely want to see this movie. But then at the end card says what? It says the three words that we've been waiting for: coming to theaters.
Coming to theaters.
So last week we had Force of Nature, and that's, you know, I think they're streaming it now. I think since between us covering it and between the release of our last week's episode, they said streaming. You know, Lionsgate was like, streaming, you know, next month or whatever.
Yeah.
So they cleared that up in the intervening week.
Well, this is July 17th in the YouTube description. Do you think July 17th is too ambitious?
So I think it's much easier to change something when it's in a YouTube, you know, comments or descriptions thing than to change it on the video. So the video itself says coming to theaters. And I think that's...
Doesn't give a date.
That's more of a statement as to like, we are bringing this to the movies. Don't you worry. You're going to see this the way you see all Christopher Nolan films, the way they're meant to be seen.
2023.
Enveloping you with all your senses. You know, he's a very, you know, Chris Nolan's a sensory director. Like, he envelops all of your senses. You know, you and I have joked about the brown tone before, but his stuff is so full of bass. You know, every one of his movies has this bass line in it where it hits you in the gut with this subwoofer energy. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So I think this is no different. You know, this is, you know, Inception fodder. It feels like they talk about Dark Knight and they talk about Dunkirk, but it really feels more like Inception than anything
else. For sure. Else I would agree with that.
That it's portraying. But I think it's almost like we don't have to say Inception. If you're an Inception fan, you know. But if you're a fan of action, or if you're a fan of historical war movies, then maybe we're stretching to get you to the theaters, because we won't be able to pack the theaters. You know what I mean? We're gonna have to like, you know, have everybody be social distance within the theater and have these kids, you know, we're gonna have less screenings because there's gonna be more cleanings between viewings. So I just love the stance of like, it doesn't matter. This is IMAX. It was shot for IMAX, which means, you know, even if you don't see it IMAX, it means that it's big in scope and in view.
So movies often capture the zeitgeist of a culture.
Mm-hmm.
Is stopping World War III top of mind like it was in the 1960s or 1980s? I mean, I don't know. It's like, we got to stop World War III. Is that really something people are still concerned with?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think, you know, as most of his stuff, it's an allegory for something, you know, I think.
Yeah.
I think we don't want to get too political, but World War III feels more like a civil war. It feels more like what's going on right now.
I gotcha.
As we live in quarantine from the virus, but I had to go shopping for a couple of things at the grocery store today, and they closed the grocery store early because of the riots and the uprising. We're in LA County, we're quarantined from 6 to 6, you know?
Ugh.
You guys aren't, right? You're up there, right? You don't get quarantined.
No, we don't have anything, so yeah. You know, this movie's going to be confusing, though, I think. So with that said,
yes,
I don't think one viewing is going to be enough. I think it's going to require like 2-3, you know, multiple viewings, because I think you're going to you have to first wrap your brain around everything's going backwards.
Mm-hmm.
You have to think kind of in that backwards linear projection. Like when they show him catching bullets and things.
Right.
A lot of the scenes are going to be working in reverse. So you're going to watch it play out, but then your brain's going to have to deconstruct what just happened.
Right.
After the fact, while some other scene is taking place. So it's like while another scene's taking place, you are putting that kind of on pause, I think. So you're going to miss a few things while you're trying to digest and comprehend what it is that you just saw.
Right.
So because of that, I think it's going to require 2, maybe 3 viewings to make sure that you're catching everything.
Yeah. Or catching everything in retrospect. I don't know. You're not.
Yeah, no, for sure.
I feel like, so, you know, we talk about the legacy cell and things like that. But it feels like this is Chris Nolan's Matrix. You know, this feels like he has this, you know, what's his name? Denzel's son. he has his character that is so important that it has to be him. You know, he's the crux of why this has to happen, you know? And it's an interesting blend of the action movies that he's done and Inception and Interstellar, where it's like this introspectiveness for him to blend those things into one movie. Like, I like his movies independent of what they are. You know, I was a big Interstellar fan, but a lot of people hated it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and The Dark Knight, I loved it. It was, I think, some of the best Batman movies. But, you know, they're still action movies built on action. And Inception had some action in it, but it didn't really break the action barrier. It's more of a psychological thriller, you know? So I think for him to be able to blend it, if he can do it at his high stakes, high level, that this is something that I would definitely want to go see. And hopefully I'll see it before my birthday, because that's when I got to see Interstellar on a midnight screening on my birthday weekend.
Oh, midnight.
And it was like a 3-hour movie. I was riveted. You know, normally I fall asleep during, you know, the slightest of things, you know, so.
Yeah.
So it kept me going.
We'll talk about falling asleep later.
Okay, great.
Overall, I think this is a watch. I'm going to watch, you know. It sounds like you're going to watch too. I mean, this looks really cool.
Yes. We'll have to figure out how to, you know, get sitters for the kids, because I don't even know how that works now.
Right, that's true. So, Ted, you don't know me. What is that title? You don't know me.
Well, I think it's, you know, her name is know me, right?
Well, name is know me, but you don't know me? What does that even mean?
Well, it's a euphemism.
You don't Ted. Right?
Right.
I don't know. So a documentary about the movie Showgirls.
Yes.
Did you see Showgirls when it came out?
I saw Showgirls when it came out.
Okay.
I was a huge Saved by the Bells fan. I was a huge, Memento fan, which I guess has one of the actresses from Showgirls. And then Bound is another movie she did. But it's like, I appreciated it. I didn't think it was as bad as everybody thought it was. I will say that. You know, I didn't think it was as horrible as people said it was. And then it was interesting to me, I did not realize that it had become a cult classic, a Rocky Horror Picture Show of its day. You know what I mean?
Who did?
I guess this very small community subset, you know.
I guess, man. I guess. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, does the story need to be told?
I think so. I think, you know, last year we had the disaster artist. I don't know if you know The Room. You know The Room?
Yeah.
So that movie has a huge cult following, same concept. So I think it's interesting to me that when movies fail, the level at which they fail is, you know, there's a tipping point where utter disaster becomes a rallying cry for people that have not succeeded. You know what I mean? It's a very interesting mental concept to wrap your head around, to the idea of, you know, this thing is so bad that we can deconstruct why people latch onto it.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I always find it comical, though, when things get these cult followings,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, sometimes you get some B-rated movie that makes no sense whatsoever, you know, why, and I don't mean the movie doesn't make sense, but it makes no sense why somebody would want to just be such a super fan of some junk. I'm not saying this is junk. I never saw it. But, you know, there's movies that people are just crazy rabid fans of, and it's like, why?
Right.
What is the point of this, you know? But, I mean, this must be one of them.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. I might have to watch Showgirls now. 95, man. I can't believe it's that old. I remember that movie poster, though.
Right?
Yeah, the movie poster was always sexy. NC-17. That wasn't it like one of the first ones?
It was one of the first ones. It was, yeah, one of the few, mostly because people just like navigated around it. You know, they figured out what do we need to cut out of this to make, you know, to bring it back from this NC-17, this new NC-17 rating.
Women licking dance poles and stuff. You know, it's like a euphemism for something else.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and a lot of like Quentin Tarantino was also threatened with some NC-17 for gore, you know, so he had to like dial some of his stuff back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was always strange to think of like, oh, if we change the blood to a black and white scene, then it won't read as blood so much. So we'll give you an R rating, you know. But yeah, so NC-17, they kind of just like thumbed their nose at it and said, sure, give it to us. We'll still air. And I think some of the acting is bad, but you know, having bad acting and things doesn't, I don't know. I was a fan of the film and of the people. So I don't know. It's interesting to me that it had a cult following. I will check this out when it comes out and I'll let you know.
Do we know where it's streaming to? Or I mean, I'm assuming it's streaming. I don't think this is coming out.
It is streaming. I did not see where, but yeah, I'm interested. I'm sure it'll be all over the place. So
yeah, I mean, I'll watch it. If it's like something like this is perfect trainer fodder,
mm-hmm.
because I mean, if they're showing TNA and stuff and I'm in the throes of some VO2 max interval, at least it'll take my mind off of the pain I'm experiencing at the moment. And yeah, then this way I could just watch it and be like, oh, there you go.
Are you back to training now?
Oh, I haven't stopped. I mean, I went out for about 65 miles today. I haven't stopped.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, what I did, I made a couple of slight adjustments. As far as I know, the July race is still on.
Okay.
And the one in November, I mean, that's so far out yet. I think that one's still going to be going, but we'll find out. I find out tomorrow, because I contacted the Tahoe race and I asked him, I said, yeah, Leadville got canceled. What's the deal with the Tahoe race? Leadville's first weekend in August. This is the middle of July. It's like a month sooner.
And you're still on.
Yeah, it's like a month sooner. I mean, how do you cancel one, not the other and stuff? So anyway, they said they're going to make a decision by June 1st, which is what, tomorrow, I think, right? So
yeah,
we'll see. But as far as I know, it's still on. And then, you know, the way I look at it is, I have all this hard-won fitness. What am I going to do? Like, just quit and sit around and, like, watch TV? No, I mean, I still enjoy working out. I still enjoy riding my bike.
And Tahoe is more infrastructure than Leadville.
What do you mean by infrastructure?
Like, they have a bigger community. You know, they have a separate support system, you know? Like, there's a lot of little towns around Tahoe that could support beds and stuff. Like you said, there are only eight beds in the whole town or four beds right. in the town in Leadville.
In Leadville, yeah.
Like if Tahoe needed something, there's tons of little towns around Tahoe that can help if you know, and they already have that infrastructure.
Yeah, Sacramento's not far.
We love Genoa. Genoa's close. Carson City, yeah.
Yeah, Carson City's not far. Reno's not far. So yeah, you have a number of bigger cities too. Not only that, but it's also a much smaller race, so you probably don't have people coming like internationally.
Right.
Or if you do, very few. And it's probably more regional as well. So a lot of the Leadville qualifying races are regional, so you capture like people from that area. So you're not getting like all 50 states, 50 other countries and stuff.
Right.
To go to a small race, a smaller race, that's going to be a qualifier for like the much very bigger race, you know? Where you have the really big race that's like world renowned, yeah, that's going to attract a lot of people. So I don't know. It might run because of that.
Yeah.
So, but I'll find out this week. And then, you know, if it doesn't, well, we readjust and we keep going and moving forward. And hey, I'm not going to just get out of shape because like one race gets canceled. You know, I mean,
you took a weekend off and then. You're good to go.
Yeah. I mean, it might be one of those things where like, okay, that one got canceled. Let's have some beers, you know, take a few days just to recoup and then be like, okay, let's get back to this thing, you know. But all right, what are you watching this week?
So I'm watching a lot of things. Let's see. There are three major points I wanted to make this week. The first one is kind of short. We watched a little bit of Space Force today. So
did you
watch Space Force with the family?
Well, you said a little bit. You didn't finish it?
We watched two episodes. But the second episode...
Oh, that's right. It's a series. It's not a movie.
It's a series. Yeah. And again, the kids are like, oh, this is a series? I was like, it's like The Office. And my kids haven't seen The Office. So they're like, well, that doesn't mean anything to me, Dad. Thanks.
Is that how it's set up where it's like it has like the shaky camera in The Office and they follow people around?
No. I just said that because, you know, it's part of the creators and Carell. And
oh, okay.
I don't think it's even the creators. I think it's, I don't forget who it was. I think it's Mike Judge. But it has the humor of The Office. So it's this dry humor that kind of, it'll hit you and it's funny, but it's not necessarily laugh out loud, but you just remember it as funny. It sticks to you kind of as a funny thing. But the second episode, it reminded us that it's on Netflix and it reminded us that it's not, you know, suitable for all ages. And it has some humor in it that I was like, you know, it doesn't pique my radar antenna for, you know, warning, kids are in the room, you know, but I'm a little brash about it when it comes to that stuff. So
like sexual humor or
a little bit. So there's a monkey in space and they kind of are talking to the monkey. So the way that they talk to this monkey is just ridiculous and sad and realistic and too real. So some of the humor around that was disturbing to my wife and my son. But my daughter and I, Audrey and I, were just like, it's funny. It's funny in a, you know, in a gross kind of very, you know, crude way.
Yeah, it's crass.
But Anne leaned over to me and goes, after this, we need to find something else to watch.
That's hilarious.
So I was like, I guess we lost out on this. And I was like, maybe What We Do in the Shadows. And I was like, no, I'm not even going to try it.
Not for children.
So then I said, oh, you know what? The kids have talked about it and they haven't seen it. And they wanted to see the trilogy, or at least my son did, the Back to the Future trilogy.
Oh, okay.
So we watched the first Back to the Future and it holds up so well that my son was running around the room to old Huey Lewis songs. You know what I mean?
It holds up?
It holds up amazing. Anne and I watched it. It came out a couple weeks ago on Netflix, and Netflix acquired it, the trilogy. And we watched the first one late at night. And I don't know why I didn't talk about it. But we watched it and I was like, oh, this is still a good movie. And Anne said she hadn't seen it since it came out. And when it came out, she saw it like 5 to 10 times right when it came out.
Yeah.
But she hadn't seen it since then. And I was like, oh, that's interesting because, you know, 2015 2015, there was that huge revival when they had the actual date of what the future was, the future date that they went to, October, whatever, 26, 2015 or something like that. So it was very interesting to watch it with Bryce to see if it would hold up for him. Audrey thought it was funny, and we were really bonding as a family. Anne and I had seen it recently, so we were like, let's finish this puzzle. So we knocked out this 500-piece puzzle while we're sitting there during one movie. And the kids are like, you finished the whole puzzle while you're doing this, while we're watching this movie? I'm like, yeah, we've done it before. And it was very strange. Like, is there a site? Has anyone done a study on whether completing a puzzle in the past imprints on the people that have done the puzzle to make it easier for them to do it again, even when it's like, it's still like completely undone? Do you know anything about that? I'm interested in doing a study about that.
You're saying that if a puzzle was done and then it gets put away and then like you somehow remember how all the pieces went together and then later you could put it together really quick?
It was definitely going together faster than it's ever gone together before. And we don't normally do redo puzzles.
But is that what you're asking? Like you do a puzzle?
I'm asking if there's some like unconscious memory that allows you to redo puzzles faster than the first time you did them.
Okay. What I would say is yes. Because there becomes a sense of
cinematography. Yes.
Yeah, like you become more familiar with, you know, you might, okay, let's say it's one of those ones where it's like blue sky, you know, for like
right.
500 pieces or something. Uh-huh. But you're going to have some sort of recollection of, oh, I remember being here before and I took this path and man, this didn't work. So you're going to adjust and you're going to start doing things that are going to alter the outcome.
Right.
You're not going to just approach it from the point of like virgin status in a sense.
Complete unknown.
Yeah. So I would say that you're right about that. I think you are going to have a bit of prior knowledge that's going to help you either avoid the mistakes of the past or you're going to see patterns develop that you didn't know were there until you knew they were there.
The first time you did them, right?
Yeah. So I would say, yeah, you're onto something there.
And it's also there, I'm sure there's a combination of like a bias in there as well as whenever we go somewhere. So we go to a place to like, let's say to go pick up that heavy bag, you know, like I get the GPS directions. I know where I'm going, but going there always takes longer than coming home. And the kids are always like they're always astonished that it feels so much longer to go somewhere new than to come home. And I'm like, it's the same distance. It's the same traffic. It's the same time.
It's perception, yeah.
But it's a perceived amount of time because as you get closer to home, you know that you're approaching your home and you know that you're close, so you feel like you're already at home even before you get home, as opposed to going to somewhere new where you don't know, oh, are we there yet? You know, like, if we, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you're going somewhere you've never been, the time keeps ticking. And that unknown of when this will end, well, is unknown. And then out of the blue, bam, we're here.
Right.
I see what you're saying there, too, because the same things happened to everybody. I mean.
Right. And then the third last thing that I've watched this week, I think we've watched a bunch of other stuff, too. We tried to watch The Great. Ugh, we only got 10 minutes into The Great with Audrey at 14 and it was way too sexual in nature.
Really?
10 minutes in and it's a Hulu series and it's hilarious. But Anne was like, I'm not comfortable with this. I can't watch this with Audrey.
But will she watch it without Audrey there?
She will watch it without Audrey, yes.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what do you think about Audrey watching this without us? And she goes, nope, she can't watch it. I was like, oh, that sucks. Like, you know, it's funny stuff.
Here's what's funny, though. Like, okay, freshman in high school, then she'll be a sophomore. Next thing you know, like, I mean, she's going to be...
college.
Dabbling in things you guys even know about.
Oh,
you
please
know?
Don't tell me. Don't even, just let me be blissfully ignorant of all of that right now.
No doubt.
And then the last thing was that The Great was extra. The Mandalorian Gallery. I don't know. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that too. Well, we saw the first two episodes.
Well, the last two episodes, 6 or 5 and 6, they finally talk about the volume. And I heard about the volume when it was shooting, and it was super secret. It was super under wrap.
What do you mean the volume?
So the volume is a soundstage down in Manhattan Beach where they shot a lot of the Mandalorian. And it's the soundstage where typically you have either white psych, which is just the white background, or you have green screens that are pulled in, you know, to put things in. But instead of doing that,
okay,
Jon Favreau took what used to be white psych and turned it into huge LED monitors.
Okay.
So he had LED monitors that were putting in backgrounds and blending into the actual foreground, the sets that they were being built, and these huge sound stages, and they would build parts of the set scenery, and then other parts would be just digital off in the distance. But because they're LED monitors, it allowed for this focal point that everyone was referencing the same things, the reflections on the Mandalorian's helmet and his whole armor was real, was practical. So it was like it was catching reflections off of things. And just knowing from the little bit of marketing green screen that we do, like when you have a green screen shoot, there's a green hue, there's green reflections, there's green light. You got to take all that stuff out in layers. So you have to take out the green, everybody says, oh, you got to roto it, right? You got to cut the person out of the background and it's nice, clean, and green.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But beyond that, there's light that's cast off the green and then, you know, all these other things. And with the way that they shot it in the volume, which is the name of this soundstage, they didn't have to do that. And the reflections that are in the Mandalorian's, you know, silver helmet are real reflections from the LED projection, you know, on the screen. So it was
awesome. I can't wait to watch.
Yeah, it was awesome to talk about and just to hear them talk about and to finally be able to talk about how some of that was shot.
Well, what I liked about it, though, was the roundtable conversations.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was, you know, it's kind of like everything's black background, black tablecloth. You know, everybody's at the table talking, the various directors and producers and so on, and they get to just share their experiences. They bring in their prior experience, their prior knowledge. And yeah, that was, you know, I enjoyed that. Like I said, we're only two episodes into it, so we're not too far. But yeah, I definitely want to finish it. And the other thing I like about it, they're like 25 minutes or something, so they're pretty quick.
Yeah. And again, and just like Mandalorian, like some of them are longer. Like the last one we saw, I think, was 42 minutes or something of that. And, you know.
No.
So everything does its own thing. What else have you been watching this week?
The Least Expected Day inside the Movistar Team 2019. So that was one on Netflix. It's the professional cycling team Movistar, and it's about like a day they had that was least expected, I guess. You know, they win. I'm assuming I'm only in a couple episodes, but the only reason I wanted to bring it up, though, is it's done in Spanish and it's subtitled, and the subtitles roll through pretty quick.
Yeah.
So you're kind of on edge, and it's kind of like subtitle etiquette for when a show is coming on, right?
Uh-huh.
And I understand you're filming and people are talking and you're not going to slow down the scenes just so people have time to read.
Mm-hmm.
But like the anxiety that builds because you're just sitting there waiting for the next thing to come on so you can read it really quick. And you're missing half of the picture.
And it's not high enough profile for them to do a dub, huh?
I don't think so. You know, and I don't know a dub. I mean, dubs are kind of janky too, though. But
yeah.
But the main thing, though, is it's like, it's crazy how subtitles, because you see these scenes and then let's say they're not talking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're not talking. That's fine. But then they start talking. And like the anxiety level, like I said, has you at the edge of the seat trying to capture all this reading that you have to do that you just miss what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just, and like I said, the main reason I wanted to bring it up was not, I mean, I talk enough bicycle stuff anyway, but it's because of just subtitles. I don't know why people like subtitles. We watched the first episode of Lance.
Oh, yeah.
On ESPN.
That's what I wanted to ask you about.
The second episode, well, there's only two episodes. The second one is probably on right now as we speak or something, or you know. And, you know, okay, it didn't tell me anything I didn't already know.
Okay.
There's that. The second thing is it got me so intrigued that I wanted to go and listen to Lance Armstrong's interview with Joe Rogan.
Oh, really?
And I never listened to it, but it was from 2015. And I would say his interview with Joe Rogan was like spot on, you know, and he even told him, he's like, you know, if I did this interview 10 years ago, meaning like 2005, he's like, I would have just lied to you the whole time.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, lying to people sucks and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Right. So, and I thought it was really just, he laid it out. I thought the Joe Rogan one was a little bit better than what this is.
Okay.
This goes into a lot of the background and it has, it's not just an interview. I mean, it has all the background, like footage of when he was a kid and triathlons and swimming. And
what about the acquaintances? It felt like the acquaintance in the trailer, it felt like the acquaintances were going to be leaned on heavily to kind of paint the picture of what Lance was outside of, you know, his own testimonial.
I would say not leaned on heavily. I would say everybody was asked very similar questions. I think everybody answered pretty much in step with how Armstrong answered, more or less like, yeah, we all doped. If you didn't dope, you went home and got a job.
Yeah.
Because it's just what it was.
It wasn't even worth your time. Right.
I like the way one of the guys put it. He said, if it's a 100-hour race, you know, the Tour de France, it's a 100-hour race. The last place guy is 2 hours behind. So you could say that's like 2%.
Wow.
If you're not doping, doping has roughly like a 5-8%. That would put you 5 hours behind.
Oh,
you're not
God.
Even in the race at that point. To come in 2 hours behind or the first place guy, like everybody was doping. That's
yeah.
the only way to beat, like, that's the price of entry.
Right, right.
And here's the other thing that I think is brilliant, though. So he's going into court where he eventually settled for $5 million, but the federal government was suing him for $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
And the main thing about a lawsuit is you have to prove damages.
Right.
You know, and that's true for like any lawsuit. You have to prove damages. Mm-hmm. And he's going into it and he's thinking, like, well, we're going to fight this thing because we have a good case.
Is this because of USPS?
Exactly right. Yeah.
Really? Wow.
And that's what it gets into, right? So they paid roughly $100 million in, you know, salaries, team buses, food, bikes, you know, I mean, like,
yeah, everything.
Everything. They paid like $100 million. So they want their money back. So the Armstrong campaign is trying to say that they have a good case because there were no damages, because the U.S. Postal Service and others, Trek Bicycles and everybody, I mean, everybody made money on this thing, right?
Right.
The Postal Service, and I got my numbers wrong, I'm sure, but the Postal Service made $300-400 million.
Publicity, yeah, off of that.
Off of his winning of all these races. So yes, they paid out money. It was fraudulent. He defrauded everything. However, everybody like made out like bandits because of him.
Right.
So what damages are you suing me for because you made 4 to 5 times what money you're asking back?
Yeah.
That's what he was going into. And then I guess there was like, you know, if you think about like a percent that you could lose, there was like a 5% you could lose or something. So he's like, I don't have $100 million check to write if I lose this thing. So they settled for $5 million and that was the end of
right,
it. You
right.
know? And, but anyway, we tried the Sisters Brothers.
Okay. Not a fan.
We started a little bit late.
Okay.
You know, about 8:30 at night. So, which means it's going to end at like 10:30. So about 9:30, we're in there and it's like, I'm falling asleep, you know, and it's just, it's a lot of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Jake Gyllenhaal's in it, you know, and Joaquin Phoenix and stuff. I mean, there's like a great cast. The movie up to that point, it was good. I mean, I know you're not into Westerns, but it was good. But man, I couldn't hang. I was losing it. And finally, I told Clarissa, I said, we got to do this another night. Like, I can't make it. So with that, I would say it's worth getting back to, I think.
Which is that on? Which streaming?
That was on Hulu.
Okay.
And then more episodes of What We Do in the Shadows, and then lots of random YouTube stuff. But the coolest thing on YouTube that probably a lot of people watched was the SpaceX NASA launch of the Dragon capsule with Bob and Doug. Took them up to the space.
Can I say that the uniforms that they were in are some of the best uniforms I've ever seen.
Custom made, like the old NASA ones were like medium female, large male. And like you just had to fit your body into them. These things were custom tailored to the stitch.
It looked good. It looked like they had taken cues from Star Trek and wanted, and like, we need to make something that is cinematically acceptable. Like even the helmets, when the face mask comes down, we always joked,
right,
that like, you know, practical helmets and practical hoods and practical visors weren't very good. You couldn't see the person. So futuristic visors or futuristic things that are used in movies are always built in such a way that you can, you know, you can shoot them in there, you can take video of them in the suits and still see them acting in their faces.
And not have reflections.
But also show their whole face.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so this is like, it looks like it's built for a movie set more than for practicality, but I guess it's both. So I really appreciated their their spacesuits. Is that superficial of me?
No, but I told Clarissa, I said, we're not ready for primetime. When you think about like Lost in Space or, I don't know, Star Wars, Star Trek, you know, any of these movies, television shows where, you know, it's like, all right, let's go to the space station, hop in the spaceship, bam, take off. You're at the space station. I mean, you're sitting there for like, I don't know how many hours putting in the liquid oxygen. The white steam is blowing off now. That's normal. And I mean, it's like a 2-hour run up that we saw. I mean, obviously it was way longer than that.
Yeah.
But that we saw for this thing to go. And then the countdown and the launch. And then wake up the next morning and we put it on like something like 19 hours later. You know, and then they're sitting there like, yeah, you've been watching this for 24 hours or whatever. If you've been with us, I'm like, I don't know who's watching for 24 hours. But the docking alone, then they dock and then they have to like depressurize the one cabin and get this other. Then they have to scrub the CO2 and then they have to, by the time they docked to when they came out was like 4 hours.
Right, right, right.
I mean, and here you're watching like Lost in Space where it's like, run, kids, jump in. We got to take off. They jump in. I mean, the door shuts. They blast off. It's like, yeah, our space program is not there.
So we have a few years. 2024, I believe, right? Is that when we're getting to the moon?
Is that what it's going to be? Just hop in and go?
Well, we're going to get to the moon. We got to get to the moon in such a way we can like colonize it or something, right? Is that our thing?
And I think when you watch all these space, you know, like I said, Star Wars or any of them, you know, I think what it is, it's like they want to have you taking your car over like to work, right? You just get in, turn on the key, back out, you go.
Uh-huh.
You're not sitting in the driveway for 3 hours
check.
Yeah,
left blinker,
systems.
Left blinker, check. Right blinker, check.
And load in the fuel. 10 minutes before departure, you know? And then you get to work and you sit in the parking lot for another 3 hours before you get out of it. It's like, no, man.
Well, now we have to wait 14 days when you get to work.
Quarantine for 14 days after you get to work. Our expectations of space travel from the movies and the reality of space travel, yeah, we are not even close.
Yeah.
It's still 1965 when it comes to that stuff.
Oh, did you hear? The Right Stuff has moved now from Nat Geo. So I guess Nat Geo owned the rights to Right Stuff and they moved it to Disney.
Oh, I didn't know.
They moved it to Disney Plus.
Oh, must watch. I will watch with the boys. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. I don't know if it's there yet. I don't know. There's a lot of announcements. Hamilton is releasing early on July 3rd on Disney Plus.
Yeah, you talked about that.
So we're all excited about all this stuff. We've been listening to Hamilton a lot. Like we just have Hamilton play on Alexa in the background while we're cleaning and stuff. And it's amazing. It still holds up. and I was cleaning the bathroom listening to it.
Well, it's only a couple of years old. I mean,
but it's so funny. Like I was listening to it, and then I closed the door to clean another part of the bathroom, and then I open it after it's done, and Audrey jumps into the doorway and she's singing the next part of it, and she goes, "Even when the door was closed, I knew what part you were on," and stuff. So we're a huge Hamilton household. Have you watched anything else? Anything else on the during the week?
No, that was pretty much it. I mean, like I said, just lots of random YouTube stuff that I do and stuff.
Well, Ann and I have been watching concerts on YouTube as well. And today we watched the Dave Matthews concert. It's presented by Verizon, and they're trying to give like small businesses like a pay it forward small businesses concert by Dave Matthews. The person, not the band. He does it by himself in his own little home studio. And he is amazingly hilarious to listen to. Like, you know, you can tell that he needs an audience to feed off of, that he feeds off their energy. So he constantly is talking about, like, if anyone's out there, I only can see a lens of a camera. You know what I mean? And both Anne and Audrey are like, he's way too high to be doing this. And I was like, no, I mean, he may be, probably, but normally it's met with an energy that is palpable through his audience, you know? So can you imagine going from playing to hundreds of thousands of people, to then playing to a camera that you set up by yourself? And like, he jokes about how he, you know, he can barely remember what guitar he's supposed to use. Because I was like, can you imagine being, for decades, you work on stage, right? It's your job to play these notes and to sing these songs. But somebody else's job is to run up to you and stick a guitar in your hand, because this is the guitar you use for this song in your playlist, you know? He's playing some of these songs, and he goes, what's wrong? Is that the wrong? And then he plays like the first couple bars of a song. He goes, oh, that's right, it's this other guitar. And then he's like, he has four guitars that he has to use, and he's like swapping them out himself. And yeah, and he's plugging them in and stuff. And then he changes his guitar for one song. He goes, oh, actually, no, it's the same guitar. It's the same guitar. And he puts it back on. And it's like all of the stuff that he does in between is almost as good as the music. I love Dave Matthews Band, but just even, and then Anne found a video that I haven't watched yet. And there was a hot mic after he recorded. And if that's as good as the stuff that's in between his songs, it's phenomenal.
We'll check it out. That sounds awesome. After we're done here, I'm definitely going to be looking into some of that.
Cool.
All right, man. So episode 120. So yeah, how did your beer finish out?
My beer finished as all good IPAs finished, warm and delightful. And it was extra piney. You know, the citra, the citric and tropical flavors kind of mellowed even deeper into the background. And the pine, you know, when in a warm IPA, that pine, I mean, it makes me want to go out and get one of those Figaro Mountain black cones, because that black cone is the piniest of all of them. You know, and like I would venture to say that I think I would like a room temperature black cone as good as a cold one.
Yeah, those are definitely good.
How did yours finish?
Mine finished off really smooth. I think as it warmed a little bit, some of the flavors kind of came more forward, but overall, again, like it never was really overpowering with that banana-y Belgian flavor. It was just super mild and smooth. I really enjoyed it.
Not overly sweet.
No, not at all. Yeah. Not sweet at all. Yeah, it was great.
Cool.
All right, man.
Awesome.
So we'll talk to you next week. We'll get this in the can, and you have a good week and look forward to Friday.
Cool. Talk to you later.
All right, Ted. Later.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.